if you're making a decision and you're looking back on your best investments, a lot of times people say that their best investment was the one that had, or their best investment decision was the one that had the highest return. But in actuality, that's a mistake because they're judging the quality of their decision based on the result and not based on the process taken to get there.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Cole McEvely has gone from being an engineer to an investor advocate. He's experienced the journey from serving oneself to want to serve a community. Colm is also an investor of mine in some of our deals, and I've certainly appreciated getting to know Colm here over the last few years, meeting up at conferences and whatnot. So it's a pleasure to have you back here on the show, Colm. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh my gosh, thank you, Sam. And thank you for exposing people to alternative investing opportunities outside of multifamily.
Absolutely, man. The pleasure is mine. It's a blast to do those things. Today, you know, there's three questions, Colm, I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started in single family. I had a heart failure, which basically had me have a midlife crisis in my late 20s. And that pushed me to creating multiple income streams. So I looked towards multifamily syndication. I connected and worked with Neil Bawa. And then I also worked with Viking Capital. So I helped raise collectively about 160 million from retail investors. Personally, about 60 million I've converted to the 160, but I have exposure to different systems and processes. And over that journey, I had more than 6,000 documented investor calls. So what we're talking about today, and the whole purpose of the call today, is to help individuals realize that everybody has certain types of biases. And you need to create a decision-making process to reduce heartache and headache. And it's going to save you time and put you in the driver's seat as an investor. So, at the end of this, reach out to me. I don't have any deals to pitch, but we can help create a decision-making process that's appropriate for you. I had this midlife crisis. It pushed me into creating different multiple income streams because my W-2 wasn't fulfilling, but I was being compensated well. And so currently I've been involved in about 24 syndications, helped raise money for 19, and then I'm currently in 17. And some of those are actually your investments. I'm an LP in 7 and an 8 and a general partner in 10 right now.
Wow, dude, that's amazing. I mean, that's a really cool journey. I'd at some point would love to get more of your backstory. I know we don't have time for that here today, but I think that's really cool that you've decided and you found real estate as a way to augment and support the life that you needed to lead while you were taking care of getting your own health back on track.
Well, think about with stock investing. If you were to call Amazon and say, hey, can I get a loan to buy some of your stocks? They would laugh at you. Sure. But the power of real estate, and like even in the project I'm involved with you, where our cost of money was 6% fixed, right? And we have leverage in real estate. And that's why real estate, if done properly over time, is a get rich slow way to do it, because we have leverage. And then when you're partnering with other investors, it does two things. As an active side, we're leveraging other people's money and bank money. And then as a passive side, I think the most important thing is I get to leverage my time. Mm-hmm. I have 5 single family rentals, and those take way more time than any of the 24 commercial syndication investments I've been involved in. And I make an incredible amount of return on my time as a passive investor. And that's ultimately my goal, is to be 100% passive.
I love that, man. That's fantastic. Yeah. And that's it. I do love, most, not all. I've got a couple passive investments that, they were my own fault. Cause we were talking about this last night, when your gut tells you early on that, man, we're gambling on this. So I can't say I love all of them, but I love most of them. But that's the ones I'm not happy with are my own fault. So I got nobody to blame but me for that. But no, this is really great. I want to talk, cause I know, again, time is of the essence here today, unfortunately for both of us, but you mentioned early on about the decision-making process. You're approaching this conversation from the investor standpoint. Is that right?
Well, because I'm an individual, because I'm a LP, I'm a passive investor myself, I think of a lot of different things. But because I've had over 6,000 documented investor half an hour calls, I recognize the decision-making biases that people have. And there's three big ones that stand out. There's one, it's called a decision bias, where every decision you need to realize a bet. And so if you don't actually break down the process of making the decision as a level of risk on each of the different criterias, you're probably going to make inconsistent decisions. So the first thing is understand every decision you make is bias, and that it's based on the info that you have. So the tangible takeaway from this is, have you validated where you're getting the information that you're making your decision on? If you're getting it from the selling broker, that is the, you know, they have a financial incentive to swoon you. So you need to understand, are your assumptions based on validated information from reliable resources? That's the first thing. And so I'll talk to investors over these calls, and they'll bring up objectives. And sometimes it's really clear that they got an objective from like Yahoo Finance, that, and it was a market data for the entire country. But it's like, we're talking about, you know, something hyper local. You know, real estate's hyper local, and a perfect example is, you know, you go to where Elvis Presley grew up. You know, isn't that a pretty dangerous area, right? But right. Like a mile away isn't really nice. Like
Yeah, you know? Graceland is certainly not in the nicest portion of Memphis. That's for sure.
Yeah, but like, you go to Georgetown or Germantown, and it's a completely different demographic and income, and so. But if you make that investment city a decision based on the data from the entire metro, you're going to miss out on that. You're going to miss the granularity. So the key thing is understand where your information is coming from and where you're getting the information. They have something to gain. So always ask for the CoStar report and then the underwritings, but that's another thing. So another thing is results biases. I don't know. Are you a big American football fan?
You know, unfortunately I would lose on anything sports related. So,
That's right. But that's fine. So, but the whole point is results biases is another thing that, if you're making a decision and you're looking back on your best investments, a lot of times people say that their best investment was the one that had, or their best investment decision was the one that had the highest return. But in actuality, that's a mistake, because they're judging the quality of their decision based on the result and not based on the process taken to get there. So what I mean is, in 2018, there was an interception by Malcolm Butler on the Patriots. Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seahawks, made a call of doing a 1 yard throw on a first or second down, because he wanted to use all four downs. And everyone's like, why did you do a 1 yard throw that got intercepted when you have the best running back in the league, Marshawn Lynch? He could have just slammed into it and tried to get the touchdown. This is like the fourth quarter. They ended up having the interception. The Patriots ended up winning the Super Bowl, and everybody called, you know, Pete Carroll a dingus for calling that play. You know, why would you give an opportunity to have an interception? But truthfully, if you look back at the statistics of it and you look back at what had happened earlier that year, there were 0 1-yard interceptions that entire year. Mm. So from a philosophy perspective, he actually had that a solid decision, but the results is what crushed him, even though it was the right decision. And then the last bias that you need to understand as an investor is confirmation biases. So this is where you are tending to interpret new information as evidence to confirm your existing beliefs. And so this is when you're dealing with an investor, or you are an investor and you have an assumption that, you know, single family is better for XYZ reason, or, you know, this type of asset class or asset type is better for a certain type of reason. So being cognizant of your own beliefs when interpreting other information, that can really muddy the water of your decision-making process and of your investor's decision-making process. So the way you want to do that is, as an investor, you create a decision-making process, an actual step-by-step journey that you go through. And we'll talk about that next. As somebody who's trying to raise money, you want to learn how and where your investors are getting their decision. And then once you understand where the investors are getting their decision, you probably understand what type of messaging and what type of, you know, Grant Cardone says certain things. Well, it's interesting that 6 months later, he has a project that aligns with what he was saying 6 months before. You know, it's his persuasion. So when you're raising money, you really need to understand where your investors are getting their information, because you can't dictate where they get their information. You can only try to help how they interpret that information. And that's when you're dealing with their confirmation bias.
That, man, that's powerful information. It's great. I mean, in what you've broken down, a very simple steps of what those different biases are. And yeah. I'm thinking about myself as an investor, as a deal sponsor. I mean, these same things apply to, I think, all of us in some regard. That decision-making process, we'll get to that. I guess going back though, the one that really stood out to me was the results biases. I think that's one that's hard for me to wrap my head around, because there's so many different moving pieces inside of that. Like results biases, it might be that this sponsor has always made money, and so whatever deal they do, I'm just going to throw money at it because, hey, they've always made money.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if that's inside the decision-making process, you could poke holes in that philosophy all day long by saying, wait, you know what? Just because they've hit 10 out of the last 10 doesn't mean that the 11th one's going to go well.
Yeah.
You'll need to get back in. And I'm guilty of that as a passive investor. Just going,
and what's the strategy too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a new type of asset type or class. Is a new type of strategy they've never done before, you know? But sometimes you take risks as an investor, like, you know, even for like with you, I really liked you as a person. I liked your other strategies on your other projects. And one of the things I did is I asked you if I could invest below the minimum amount, because I promised I wouldn't be a pain in the ass investor. And you graciously let me, and I plan on investing with you in the future. And so that was an example of where I was going through my decision-making process. And I was unsure about the sponsor. I liked him ethically, but I liked everything else on the deal.
Right.
And there was actually a couple of things in the numbers where I thought, well, I think that is a little aggressive. However, there were other areas that made me feel like even if there was misses in those areas, we're going to be okay, because there's such a high ceiling to failure because of, you know, on the one particular example is the cap going in cap rate versus the cost of money. Like there's a positive difference, you know,
right. Or,
you know, so anyway, but that's part of the decision making process. So, and if you want to learn more about how you can make decisions better, I recommend two books. The first book is called How to Decide or Thinking in Bets by Annie Duke. She's a professional poker player. And some of the philosophies that I just presented to you stem from that, but they're recognizable when you're having conversations with sponsors or when you're having conversations with investors. So look up Annie Duke. You don't even have to buy the book. I truthfully recommend you just put on YouTube and go water your plants. You know, just listen to the Cliff Notes version on YouTube while you're watering your plants or driving your kids to school. That way you don't have to buy the book. Let's get real. Sometimes people don't make time for that.
Well, we don't make time for it. And I've always thought that when you're reading books like that, it's always just the nuggets that stand out anyway. So you might as well just get the Cliff Notes version and be like, oh yeah, that's a great point, without all the background filler information I probably won't retain long term.
Well, so here's the thing. Here's the quote of the day. Information without integration is just a distraction.
Boy. You said it, man. That's it. Yeah. And we are in that information overload point of our life. Yeah, it's the you're speaking to my language right there, where it's just like, just don't tell me. I can't take anything else in. So information without integration is just
a distraction. Or it's just noise. You know, information without integration is just noise.
Just noise. Man, yeah. this is great. So how else, and I know we got 3 minutes left here, but how else have you taken this decision-making process? You sound like you figured out how to kind of crack the code for your own investments and things that you review, but you've also probably had to reverse engineer this and understand how this applies to investors as they look at opportunities you're presenting.
Yeah, it depends on also their profession that shapes how they entertain, how that shapes how they receive information. When I talk to software engineers, they're very methodical. So I helped raise $80 million with one company. Those are mostly Bay Area tech people. That was a very different conversation than when I was raising money with my second company, Viking Capital, which was almost 95% physicians. You know, because the physicians don't necessarily have the business acumen and the numerical, the background from the math perspective. They're very smart and very intelligent, sure, but you're dealing with different obstacles in conversations where a software engineer will ask you 85 questions and you can literally chew on their process. You can tell they're making process, but it's a long, laborious thing, but you know that they're not going back.
Right.
Where there might be a more whimsical emotional decision when you're dealing with a physician investor. And that's actually where my heart lies, because I do have these heart problems. So my goal is to do two things. One, create a nonprofit that pays for therapy for people that have had surgery like myself. And then two, serve the life-saving medical professionals, specifically cardiologists, because I've had heart problems. But I know we're running out of time. Would you be interested in maybe doing like a short part two sometime, where we dive into the decision-making process?
Oh, 100%, man. No, this has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's one of those things that, we've just begun to really, really dig in on this. And yeah, we'll come back and we'll do part two, here in the next couple of weeks. Then we'll let you know, obviously listeners let you know when this goes live, but you've given us great things to think about even yet here today, as we've discussed really the decision-making process, validating that info, results biases, confirmation biases, how that applies to your investors, how it applies to you as an investor. And then it as for us raising capital, it also applies to how we approach those various conversations with our different types of investors. So
a confused investor doesn't make a decision. So you have to help them create a process and put them in the driver's seat. They'll feel the tangible momentum of having a checklist, and it demystifies the process. It builds trust with them because you're transparent, gives them the control to look through many deals a lot quicker, and it'll save them time and headache because they know that they follow their process every single time and they don't have to look back.
I love it, man. Colm, thank you for taking the time to come on the show here today. I certainly appreciate it. And as always, it's great to see you and catch up. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
LinkedIn, my name and number will be in the show notes, or you could go to my website, tgaip.com. I'm still building a website, cause I only started this company a couple months ago, but we do have a mission to, donate $10 million to pay for therapy for people with heart surgeries. You know, that's a very personal thing to me. I know that you give back to your community yourself. But we're all about impact investing and making a change, because we have talents and skills that we can touch people in our community a lot more than just, you know, increasing investor returns and offsetting their taxable income.
Right. Absolutely. Colm, thank you again for your time today. I certainly appreciate it. It was a blast having you back on.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.